I'm Tom Gentry, and this is Men Who Talk. It's brought to you by Begin Again Institute, a two-week intensive program for men with intimacy disorders in Boulder, Colorado, where my friend and co-host Ed Tilton is the chief operations officer. Ed and I wanted to have a series of conversations on some of the barriers we see that prevent men from living more authentic lives. We want to underscore the fact that healthy men do talk. We want to help men who often do struggle with intimacy be more true to themselves. And we want to help people who love men maybe understand them a little bit better. So please listen in, subscribe to the show, share this conversation with someone you love, and enjoy Men Who Talk. I'm Tom Gentry. It's my friend Ed Tilton. Ed is the director of operations at Begin Again Institute in Boulder, Colorado. It's a program that treats men with intimacy disorders. This week, we're going to talk about how emotions are not gender dependent. Mm-hmm. And before I opened the room, I went back into some of what I've written to kind of jog my memory as to what I've written about this. And it reminded me how upsetting this issue is to me, actually. And I think specifically this idea of men needing to get in touch with their feminine side. You know, I do, you know, I'm open to the idea of masculine energy, feminine energy, divine masculine and feminine, all that stuff. I don't argue that culturally, in general, women are more emotionally literate than men. But I think that's because that's how we're socialized. And that's what we're taught. And the best I could gather, trying to figure out where this idea came from that women are emotional and men aren't, is I think it's somehow related to Carl Jung's work around the collective unconscious, where he identified that we all have feminine and masculine traits. And so somehow over time, that's all kind of gotten dumbed down to either women are emotional and men aren't, or that women are more emotional than men and men should not be emotional. And in my life, how that has affected me just as an adolescent and a young adult, I went through life assuming because I was having feelings that there was something wrong with me. Mm-hmm. And that to me is where it's really, really dangerous. And aside from that, it's just not true. It's not. I think probably it's true to say that men and women experience emotions very differently. But in terms of magnitude of emotions, you know, women having deeper emotions, or I just don't think it's true. I think it's a total crock. It's just something that we say. And to me, why it's really problematic, aside from the fact that it's dangerous, is because how are we ever going to get men in general to sort out their relationship with their emotions if we tell them that if they do, they're being like a woman, which is essentially what we're saying. And most guys don't want to hear any of that. So I don't know. What are your thoughts?
Well, I certainly think that, you know, I think a lot of it comes from trying to name things to establish like trust and safety, you know, and I think that we do this I used to work with this guy, and he used to kind of have this idea that there were these man rules, you know, and that if you were, you know, one of the biggest ones, you know, whenever we would kind of have this talk and we'd say, well, what are the man rules? And everybody'd kind of go, well, I don't know. And then you'd kind of ask a second time and you'd say, well, you know, what are things that, like, as a man, you kind of hold other men to a certain standard of how to behave and how to, you know, how to interact in certain situations. And inevitably it always came up of, like, men can't cry. Mm-hmm. You know, men can't show emotion. Men can't show weakness. And, you know, I think that it's not that men don't have these emotions, because I completely agree with you that the emotions that we're experiencing are universal. That's my belief. I think the way that we're allowed to express it, or the way that we're conditioned to express it, is really specific to, unfortunately, it's really specific to, like, you know, if you look like a certain way, mm-hmm. you know, if you look like a man, you're allowed to express certain emotions. And if you look like a woman, then you're allowed to express other emotions. And, you know, if you're expressing, you know, the wrong type of emotion, then you're going to get ostracized or criticized or bullied. And it's kind of going back to this piece we talked about last week in terms of, like, tribal fit, you know, and a lot of, you said it really well, so you'll probably have to rearticulate it, but a lot of a man's understanding of himself is how other men interact with him. Mm. You know, and if I'm, you know, and I would be one of the guys growing up that was described as being, you know, emotional kid. Mm. And growing up, nobody ever said that as, like, a good thing.
Yeah. Well, like, for me, it was sensitive.
Yeah. I got that too. You know, and it was typically my mom saying it to me as, you know, I would have a tough day and she'd go, you know, you're just a sensitive kid, or you got a lot of emotions. And, you know, my mom was like, you know, she's a saint. I love her, but it was the message that I was receiving from my mom is, you gotta figure out how to curb these emotions. Because this is not, people don't like this.
Right, right.
You know, and it was this thing of, like, my relationship with my mom, which will probably be a different room at a different day of, like, men's relationships with their mothers.
Right.
But mom was kind of, like, showing me, you can be emotional with me. You can be sensitive with me. But these other boys are bullying you because you're being sensitive with them. Mm. You know, and if you want to be accepted as a whole, you got to cut this out. Mm. You know, which was kind of the beginning or the indoctrination of my living as someone who identified as being emotionally illiterate.
What's interesting to me about that as I listen to you is that's, like, half of the lesson, right? Mm-hmm. Because she's right that it's not appropriate for you to show that level of emotion to people who you can't trust, right?
Right.
But the other part is, what do you do with it then? And who can you trust with it? And this is something that I talk to my son about a lot because, you know, in a different time, I mean, somebody would have called him a sensitive kid. And, you know, I'm pretty emotionally literate. His mom's a therapist. Like, you know,
right.
He's used to this kind of talk. But, you know, I'd talk to him about, you can't go to school and expect to be able to have the same type of conversation with your teachers, let alone students. And that when it comes to sharing your emotions, how you feel, that kind of stuff, that's sacred, that you trust us with that, you know, and you don't trust other people with that until they've earned that trust and you know that they're safe to do that with. Anyway.
Well, and I think that you're hitting on a key piece and why I was so happy that we had the first conversation around intimacy, because I think it builds off of it. You know, I think what you're telling your son is you have to have people in your life that you can be intimate with in terms of having an established safety and understanding and a sense of self in relationship, you know, and I think a lot of where we get into difficult places is we aren't, there's not that conversation that's being had in most young men's lives. And so when these young men are coming in and they don't have an outlet to be vulnerable or to have intimacy, and so when they're experiencing emotions, because there's no outlet, it's coming out in weird ways, in ways of, you know, impulsivity and I would almost say just sideways expression.
Yeah.
You know, and in this day and age, and I don't want to sound like the, you know, maybe I don't want to sound like I'm super, you know, backwards or anything like that. But in the day and age of social media, I think a lot of emotions are being expressed and they're there forever. You know, and this is something that's following a lot of our youth in a way that's very detrimental to how they can then identify and connect later on to others.
Yeah. Well, one thing I'd like to touch on is the idea of containment, you know, because that's kind of what we're talking about, to be able to teach our kids or learn ourselves to contain our emotions. And like as a society, we're all about that. Put a lid on it and seal it and never take it off, right? But the containment is you know, keeping yourself under control behaviorally as you navigate through difficult emotions. And, you know, as guys, I think one of our real strengths is to compartmentalize. You know, so for me, it's like, okay, now's not the appropriate time to be sad or to be angry or to express frustration because I'm in a business meeting or whatever it is. So I need to contain that and set it aside, and later I'll call Ed.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think part of what has happened is that as the human race, you know, of course the guy chasing down the saber-toothed tiger doesn't have time to be sad.
Right.
Right. Right.
Right.
And I think what needs to happen for survival,
right,
is containment and compartmentalization. But it's as if we forgot about all that part and just know we're just going to erase the feeling. Men don't feel, men aren't supposed to feel.
Right.
Which is, you know, again, like really dumbed down, not nuanced at all.
Well, I think, you know, I think the conversation too is, I see it very similar. And I think part of the conversation is we're talking about, I think we're creating a culture where we need to be having the conversation of accessibility, versus availability, you know, in terms of being able to tap into your emotion. And I think we always need to, raising emotionally literate youth, and you know, for me, it's really about, you know, me having my son being, you know, emotionally literate is really saying, I want you to have access to your emotions when you choose to have access to your emotions. Mm. But I think so much of what we're doing in our society is not letting any emotion that we've decided is weakness or feminine or to be available, if that makes sense. Like you said, we're kind of shutting it off. Pretending it doesn't exist. And then when it does present itself, because, you know, in the work that we do, you know, at Begin Again with guys that have a lot of traumatic history, when it comes out, it doesn't come out, you know, in a very quiet and slow process. It comes out in a very, you know, explosive and destructive ways.
Right.
You know, and that's when a lot of men, I believe, have this deep rooted fear that, like, if I access this emotion, it's going to consume me, yeah, and it's going to destroy me.
Right.
Because I don't have an understanding of what it is or how it works or what it is in a relationship. And so I've just chosen not to engage at all.
Hmm.
And I think when we look at a lot of men that have lived this life, it's essentially saying to many of the guys, we want you to paint us a really great picture, but we only want you to use certain colors.
Hmm.
You know, and I can't remember if you and I had this conversation, but it was like, any color that is, you know, any emotion that doesn't necessarily fit with what it is to, quote unquote, be a man is off the table.
Hmm.
So now I want you to paint me a really nice landscape photo or a landscape with using six colors.
Hmm. No, I love that analogy, but it wasn't me who you had that conversation with. It's great.
Well, and I think that this is where a lot of guys, and you know, are living that piece of quiet desperation.
Yeah.
And I think it's not getting any better.
You don't think so?
I think there's hope.
I mean, you know, I'm not saying it's a lot better, but I would like to think it's a little bit better. You know, like you and I are raising sons.
Yeah.
Definitely. And, you know, we know an army of guys who aren't meatheads. Right.
Right.
So I do think it's getting a little bit better, but also, like, it has been startling to me to facilitate groups with late adolescent, young adult males, and the extent to which they still think, like, and I'm quoting someone else, like, to cry makes you a pussy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, I have had 19-year-olds say that to me as if it's just gospel.
Right.
And, yeah, it's still happening. And I think really another part of this is that, but it's not only guys, it's just worse with guys.
Mm-hmm.
You know, culturally we numb ourselves no matter what gender you are, and we pretend emotions don't exist, and we avoid emotions to which we attach a negative value.
Mm-hmm.
and it's just worse with guys. And, you know, what's worse in that, like if you're a guy and you have a meltdown, like you're going to get devoured.
Oh, yeah. I think that there's that. And then you've kind of lost the tribe's respect in some ways. Mm-hmm. You know, I know a lot of guys where it's like, if, you know, their tribe is everything.
Yeah.
So they will withhold information or emotion because they're really worried, like, man, if it gets out that I'm struggling with this, mm-hmm. this is what people will think of me, and I won't be invited to.
I'll be banished.
Yeah. It's the exile.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and one of the things that I was going to, you know, say is that we really will acknowledge, you know, the positive emotions or the emotions that are the socially acceptable ones. And I'm saying socially, you know, obviously different societies promote different emotions differently. But, you know, when the guys get to us and we use those feeling wheels, like there's this like really uncomfortable 15 seconds where all the guys look at the feeling wheels and they'll make jokes and they'll make light of the fact that they really just like these feelings. And it's always like, you know, I feel happy or I feel supported or I feel, you know, encouraged. And a lot of the guys will stay at that surface. Or they like to stay at that surface.
Hmm.
You know, which is why I think, and I'm speaking for myself here in terms of like a lot of my connections that are quote unquote safe tend to stay at the surface.
Hmm.
I tend to just talk about, you know, sports or the weather, Denver traffic, you know, because it's just, it's easier. There's no question of like what's below that.
Hmm.
You know, it's the, how are you? I'm good. How are you? What's new? Lots of stuff. Anything new with you? No. You know, that quick exchange.
Mm-hmm. It's really just a formality.
Yeah. And I think a lot of men can confuse that with having friends. Mm-hmm. You know, if the more people that I associate in my life means that I'm safer, then in order to be safe, I need to stay on the surface. And in order to stay in that space of safety, I shouldn't share vulnerability or worries or fears. And we kind of touched on this last week, but if the person who, in my case, if the person who's teaching me about emotion, but only half of the conversation, if my mom is just teaching me about emotion, then a lot of guys, if we marry our moms, will then inappropriately or unintentionally utilize their partners in, you know, a heteronormative relationship as the person that they can only be safe with.
Mm-hmm. Which is probably a good segue into how is it then that as a man, you express your emotions in a healthy way, have a healthy relationship with your emotions, and retain your sense of masculinity and also not repel the opposite sex and mm-hmm. also not be banished. Right?
Yeah.
And I think the most obvious part of that is that you have to be associated with the right tribe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to associate with guys who are capable of doing it. And one point I want to make that you and I have talked about before, what takes more courage for a man? If you're in a group of guys, it takes so much more courage to actually just let loose and shed tears than it does to swallow them.
100%.
I mean, it really does take courage. And so in that way, it is a bold action to take, to say, no, I'm going to feel, I'm not going to numb myself. I'm not going to sacrifice my vitality in order to, just follow social norms, right? To make other people comfortable is really, that's a big element of this too. How uncomfortable other people get if I'm in touch with my emotions and I'm willing to be intimate, but they're not. Mm-hmm. People freak out. People get mad, you know? I mean, people don't know how to deal with it if they're not like really in the same place that you are in their emotional development, right? Mm-hmm. Did I describe that clearly? Am I expressing myself clearly when I, you know what I'm talking about, but.
I do. I do know what you're talking about. I guess we'll have to ask the audience.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that part of it is we have to spend time with ourselves in order to better understand our emotions and our relationship with our emotions. And, you know, I think you touched on it earlier of like, just not numbing, you know, and I think that, you know, if the question is, how do we work to get in touch with our emotions, build connections, and have the right people in our life, it really, you know, it starts a lot with us. You know, am I giving myself enough time to feel something? Or am I just hopping from one distraction to another?
Right.
You know, am I understanding things from different perspectives, you know, in terms of like the emotion and kind of the relationship? You know, I'm a big fan of journaling. I'm a big fan of, you know, meditation. You know, are you having a daily practice where, you know, you are tapping into yourself? And that's the other piece is, you know, for me, that's the accessibility piece. You know, I want to make sure that I have access when I want to have access to better understand an emotion. You know, because when I better understand an emotion by sitting with it and processing it and looking at it from a different angle, I start to recognize that the emotions that were worrisome, they can come and they can go. Similar to, you know, I grew up in Illinois, so I always attributed a lot of like scary emotions to big thunderstorms. You know, this, I can see the thunderstorm coming. I can make sure that I'm with safe people and safe, you know, and having shelter. And that emotion will still happen, but I don't have to be completely exposed and fearful. You know, and then ultimately being able to start to share that emotion in a way that, like, I understand that this isn't going to hurt me. And therefore, who I'm sharing it with, their acceptance of that emotion is not dependent upon my survival. Because once I've made peace with the fact that this is something that happens, and I'm sharing it with somebody in a way that makes sense, I'm not at their mercy in terms of like their interpretation of my feelings doesn't dictate my survival.
Which is ridiculous to think that it would, but that's how we function. The same way, you know, you mentioned earlier how we just feel like, I know I have felt like at a different time in my life, if I actually like feel the feelings, like I might die, like, like I'm going to explode or something. If I actually let the tears come out, or I think another thing is if I cry, I might never stop.
Yeah. Well, and I think that, you know, I mean, so oftentimes the work that we do with the men at Begin Again Institute and also some of these other aspects in terms of just the work that we've done with other guys is that trauma is often rooted and it's deeply connected to emotion, memory, and behaviors. And so if my memory is my dad telling me to stop crying or he'll give me something to cry about, and I can't stop crying, I cannot stop. The way trauma works is it doesn't have a linear understanding. So now I'm looking at emotions that are similar to the emotions that I may have felt when I was 4, 5, or 6. And a memory and a response that's saying, no, you really are at fear of not being able to stop. It's illogical. You know, it's something that, like, at my age, I should probably know that that's not a real fear that I should have. But the reality is my brain has one job, and that's to keep me alive. And if my brain is telling me this is unsafe for your safety, I'm going to be more inclined to numb. And that's why I think, you know, when we talk about like, how do we become more emotionally in touch? Step one is we have to stop numbing. You know, because emotions are on the other side of typically what we're numbing. And so then I would say the last piece to that puzzle is we got to find some kindness and compassion for ourselves.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not the first person to say this, but many people have said this before, like, I would not be friends with anybody who talked to me the way that I talk to myself.
Yeah.
When I'm in my feelings or in my emotion.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And that kindness toward yourself is, you know, once I realized how deep some of the stuff that I was carrying around was and how little I was when it took root, it was easier for me to just like, man, give that little kid a break, you know? Give him a break. And probably in my work, I've realized over the last couple years, I probably say that more to people than anything else. You got to give yourself a break.
Yeah.
All the time that's coming out of my mouth. We need to be reminded. So what do you think? You think we should open the stage? You ready to do that?
I am. Yeah.
Okay. Let's get some hands up, people.
Tom and I have said a lot.
We've said a lot. Any questions, comments?
Hi, guys.
Carl, good to see you, man.
Good to see you, buddy. Really enjoyed the conversation.
Thank you.
I really loved what you were saying about the painting a picture of your emotions and having those limited colors. That was really interesting. So thank you for that. I really like that analogy.
Yeah.
Well, you know, give us credit two times and then feel free to call it your own.
Ed credit. I don't need credit for that. That was his. What are your thoughts on what we've been talking about, Carl, or any thoughts on how this applies to you or your experience with this?
Oh yeah. I mean, I resonate so much of everything you guys said. I mean, obviously we've talked a lot, Tom, and yeah, I mean, I guess having the right people around you, I think is a big factor in it, right? As we've kind of gone through life and realized things, you know, I've certainly realized that it's about the people that you have around you and seeking out the right people. And, you know, I'm a lot more vulnerable now than I ever used to be, and a lot more open with my challenges and my thoughts with people. But I guess it is because now I've found those right people to some degree. I don't think, I think what you were saying, Ed, you know, like, you know, that obviously that surface level conversation that you have with people, and people do just think that's friendship. And, I think as I've gone through my own journey, I've realized that that wasn't friendship. You know, it's the conversations that, you know, I have with people like Tom and other people in my men's group and my other close friends, you know, where we get into just have more deeper conversations about things that really matter. And know that, you know, you can just have kind of discussions around sport or cars or whatever, but also you can have those deeper conversations. And I think that is really powerful, knowing that you've got that true friendship and you can have those conversations where you do share your, you know, your emotions and your thoughts and things. So yeah, I think that was really powerful when you were talking about that as well.
Well, I think you bring up a really good point, Carl, which is I think it's just so vital to have a space like a men's group, you know, where multiple men from multiple different perspectives, typically varying stages of life, can be there for the purpose of deepening an understanding of the journey.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think you touched on it as well before that I think, you know, I always thought I had to share everything that was going on in my life with my partner at the time. And, you know, I think that puts a lot of pressure on a relationship and a partner to provide all of those needs. And I think, you know, again, everything that I've learned going through this journey of just been able to talk to other guys about these things, because how we articulate ourselves and, you know, the words, the language we use and things like that is just so different, right? We're between male and female a lot of the time. And, you know, things can come across maybe differently and stuff like that. So being able to share those thoughts and feelings with other guys that are in a similar mindset and space is just, you just feel heard, and you don't have to necessarily worry about using the wrong words or, you know, misstepping and how you communicate it when you didn't actually mean to communicate it, you know, in a negative way or anything. You just needed to get out of your head. And I think that, you know, that's so important. I've learned that you can kind of have that space with a men's group or, you know, a group of brothers that you can, you know, have that more honest conversation with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, it's, if there's a head start that you can get to all this kind of work for a guy, is to have other guys that you can talk to. I mean, it's just critical. It makes this so much easier and feels so much better when you have guys who you can talk to about the tough stuff, you know, and to be in a group of guys who you're going around and everybody's talking about their struggles and, you know, it can get pretty heavy. And then, you know, what's beautiful about it is you go through the process and everything is said that needs to be said. And then the joke happens and everybody laughs. It's great, you know, but what we want to do as guys is just skip to the jokes. Right. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't work that way. Pete, thanks for coming up, man. It's good to see you here. What's up?
Hey guys, thanks for holding the space. Great topic. For me, you didn't talk about your emotions, you know, when I was growing up. You kind of tucked them away somewhere and you dealt with them on your own. And that manifested itself for me into becoming an alcoholic. And frankly, you know, what I was doing is pushing all the emotions aside and sort of everything I've gone through in life. And I won't give the laundry list. We all go through ups and downs. That's one thing I've learned about the human race is that, you know, I would drink and use to just try to forget about that stuff. What I really, my emotions actually were able to come out when I finally succumbed to the fact that I was powerless over alcohol. And this is my story, right? That's how it happened. And I know it can happen in all different ways to people. And it was the first time I reached out kind of for help about that, that the emotional floodgates just opened. And like what I've learned is some of the toughest dudes, some of the strongest men and women can talk about their emotions freely because guess what? We all have them. And, you know, one thing I think is good is that sort of mental health and any stigmas around that, depression, anxiety, drug addiction, alcoholism, I think what I'm learning in my recovery journey is it's sort of going away. I think it's a lot more like cool, for lack of a better term, for guys to talk about their emotions, you know, like women can, in my opinion, do better than us just in general. And when I do start to open up about things like I'm in a troubled marriage, you know, my wife has cancer, my job situation, my recovery, just real life stuff. When I just bring them up at a very high level with friends, you know, old friends of mine that may or may not struggle with the same thing, all of a sudden they want to talk about their emotions too. You know, it's like something they've been wanting to do, but they're just afraid to for whatever reason. But if I find that I kind of open up that conversation and I find other guys are even willing to get into that. I mean, one example is I started a new job last summer and I was playing golf with one guy who literally I'd met for like the third time and we're playing golf and somehow drinking came up. Well, it came up because he ordered a transfusion on the golf course and asked if I wanted one. I recover out loud. I was like, no, you know, I don't drink anymore. And right away he looked at me. He's like, I may have a problem, man. And then he's telling me all about what's going on. It's the tip of the iceberg with guys. We all want to get stuff out. We just don't know how to do it because it feels a little unnatural to us. But once it starts, once you get into the real stuff, right? And I think Carl was saying that, you know, sports and cars and all the cool stuff. I like that stuff too. But once you start talking about relationships, right? Struggles in life, it's all you have to bring up. Like, hey man, I'm kind of struggling. It's good to connect with you. That's all I'll say. And next thing you know, we're talking about God knows what, but it's healthy. It feels better to talk about stuff.
Yeah. Well, then this is what we've been talking about. This is how intimacy happens. Mm-hmm. You know, one person is willing to take a risk. And then it emboldens the other person to match them, you know? And that's how we really connect with each other.
Absolutely. And I think one of the things that you mentioned, Pete, is we unconsciously will give permission for men to go deeper, you know, when we go deeper. You know, what I say is we're only as vulnerable as the least vulnerable guy in the room, you know? And so when you're out with a golf buddy and you say, hey man, this is really great to get away. Cause I've been under a lot of pressure because I'm going through something at home. That will allow them, you know, to reciprocate and kind of deepen that understanding of the emotion. So that's awesome.
Yeah. And it's one of the, I guess another head start to all this kind of work is getting sober, right? I mean, because that's how I got into this stuff, you know, personal healing, working on, you know, my relationship with my emotions, all that stuff. And, you know, the title of this, you know, room podcast, Men Who Talk, you know, I mentioned in the trailer that I just did yesterday and it's out there. I should leave a link for it, but, that I wanted to call it Men Who Talk because I'm tired of hearing people say men don't talk. And because that's not my life experience. I mean, it was. And then I got sober. And now, like, to be on a golf course with somebody and say I'm struggling, there's nothing extraordinary about that at all. Happens all the time, you know? Or, you know, like talking to a buddy of mine on the phone who says, so what's going on with you? Tell me what's going on with you. Right. And for the longest time, it was just sober guys who I had conversations like that with. But then, you know, I started gravitating towards other people who aren't in that world, but also have conversations like that. It's great. I wouldn't change it for anything. There's a hand. Yvonne, thanks for coming up.
Hi, I just started listening. So I'm at work, so I'm missing a lot. But when you speak about the emotions, the guy emotions and the communications, it's unfortunate for me in my particular case that when I try to have a deep conversation with my husband, he complains and he said, I'm deep or I'm coming at him very hard. So what I have done is I have just shut down. And I hear you men discussing how it is for you. And the analogy about here's a rule. You need to fill in this page, color this page, but you can only use these crayons. I understand that. But my frustration is I don't know where to go with the crayons with my husband because obviously I'm using the pastel shades in the box. While he's using the hard colors or the primary colors in the box. But I'm going to say, maybe has no respect for my opinion as a woman. And even though I said to him, you need to find a man that you respect and have a conversation so he can tell you how he deals with these things. So you and I can deal with these things because at this point, I'm not at the edge anymore. I have fallen over. And with that, I am going to leave my mic and just listen to you men speak.
I'm sorry to hear that, first of all. And this came up last week too, a little bit. It's not surprising to me to hear that. One of the things that comes to mind for me is that, well, first of all, you know, we can't make somebody feel, you know? Mm-hmm. So there's that. You know, we're not responsible for other people's emotions. And if someone is determined to be numb, we can't convince them to feel. As much as I hate to say it, what I have witnessed in my life, what I've experienced personally, and what I've seen is that there is a reckoning usually at some point that coincides generally with some kind of low point, some kind of crisis or something like that. There's this author, Richard Rohr, who talks about how in life we go through always at least once in the process of our adult lives, go through a descent and hopefully an ascent, you know? And like for me, a major low point, it was, you know, finding myself in the grips of alcoholism. And, you know, so that was the descent. And then the ascent began when I found recovery. And since then, there have been other descents that have been, you know, not as deep. But, you know, the beauty in all that is that that's when we grow, right? When we experience that really difficult stuff. And, you know, life deals us whatever it is, and then we have to come back. That's the stuff we really learn from. So, yeah, I don't know. Any comments, Ed?
You know, I mean, not to dig too much into your husband's personal life, but a lot of the guys that can be described similarly typically have this piece where their understanding of self and worth and value in a relationship is about being a fixer, about, you know, providing and things related to solutions. And if we're unaware of how emotions are impacting us and how we're engaging in emotions, typically we can't offer a solution to our own problem. And therefore, it becomes very difficult to have conversations about something we can't fix. You know, and so a lot of times guys will come to our partners and we're kind of speaking half the truth. You know, because at the end of the day, I'm gonna share this with you, but I know what I need to do, so I just need to handle it. But this is what I'm struggling with. And so a lot of times what'll make it really hard to get resolution with the emotion is the emotion that is expressed as anger. And it's hard to have empathy and an intimacy when anger's the forefront emotion. And so it sounds like you're offering some really great outlets, which are, you know, encouraging him to have people and space and connection where he can better understand that emotion, so that it isn't just anger that's expressed. So I would say,
thank you.
Just keep doing what you're doing. But also, you know, what Tom was saying is understand, like, it's you can't ever make anybody feel a certain way, and you can't ever make anybody do something. All you can do is give choice.
Well, and you made a really good point. One of the big, probably, milestones in my development in terms of relationship skills was when I realized that, you know, and this was in my marriage, that, you know, yeah, as a guy, I mean, I want to fix whatever it is. So, when my wife would come to me with stuff, which I might have said, you know, you're coming at me, you know, like whatever, you know, it's overwhelming. It's because I'm in the mindset of trying to solve whatever problem there is, when what she was really looking for was to be heard.
Yeah.
And so if I could just listen and hear her, and not be so preoccupied with solving whatever problem I thought she was bringing to me, and realize that's not why she's doing this. She's trying to connect with me.
Right.
Then I could just let that happen. And the other thing I realized is there are a lot of times when that's all I want from somebody too. You know, I just want to be heard. Mm-hmm. One of the things that's funny to me sometimes is, you know, when I meet a guy who, you know, I'm in this world where I talk about my feelings. And, you know, there was a guy who came to our men's group once. And, you know, he just wasn't, it just wasn't for him. But as everybody shared what was going on with them, I mean, invariably, every single one, he was talking about what they needed to do and what they should do. And like, you know, he's coming at it from that point of view. And I think the other reason guys do that is because they're uncomfortable. You know, it makes you uncomfortable if you're not in tune. So, yeah. And I think the way I learned that lesson was my ex-wife saying to me, you know, I just want you to hear me. So I would say, Yvonne, don't be afraid to just say, listen, I'm not looking for you to solve anything. I just want you to hear me. I'm trying to connect with you. Maybe that'll help a little bit. Get you somewhere. I don't know. Just a thought. This has been great, man.
We always have fun.
We always have fun, and I feel like we covered a lot. And I think for me, what, you know, you talked about being a little nervous at the top of this. For me, the sort of mild anxiety that I experience is about, are we really going to like cover this? Are we really going to do justice to this topic? And I feel like we did. I feel like we did. So I feel like it's been a great conversation. And I was, do you have access to our little master list, Ed? So we can tell them what we're going to talk about.
Oh, yeah, the master list. You know, let me pull it up real quick. Well, while I find it, if there's anybody that has a topic that they'd like us to explore, let us know.
Absolutely. You can DM me or DM Ed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're happy to entertain anything as it relates to this. We, you know, we came up with a list of 8 topics with also an understanding that it's going to need to be malleable.
Right. Well, and, you know, kind of my thought too was that our conversations will kind of inform each other.
Yeah.
You know, so this conversation will, and it's kind of the way that we had talked about it in terms of like the intimacy was important to have the first, that was the foundational piece. And now we want to talk about, you know, the second piece being emotion.
Is next week the toxic masculinity conversation?
I think it is.
Yeah. I think it is too.
We'll go with that until I find right. Here we go. Here's the tracker. I could tell everybody was on there on the edge of their seat.
Yeah, tell them what else we got.
So we got toxic masculinity, what it is and what it isn't. And then the next week we've got why don't men have lasting friendships into adulthood. And then we've got how to create friendship and growing up male. And then sizing each other up. And the last one we have is raising men from fathers to sons. So what we got so far?
Yeah.
May I make a suggestion, please?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a topic, how women, I had it in my brain, but it went away. But basically informing us women how to get across. I know you can't make it happen, but make suggestion how to get your message across to your man without offending him or watering it down. Completely. something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's Well, I think the other part of this, like I mentioned how I had to learn that lesson about she just wants to be heard.
Mm-hmm.
Another related lesson is not taking things personally, you know,
mm-hmm.
Like if my significant other tells me that she was hurt by something I said, it's not really an attack, you know, she's just telling me what she experienced as a human being so that I can know her better and understand her better. She's not telling me I'm not a good partner. She's not, you know, I mean, that's, I do think that part of this whole thing is we have to develop maybe a little bit of a thick skin that really is a tolerance to hearing things that are difficult for us to hear.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know about you, Ed, but parenthood helps with that.
Yeah. Parenthood definitely, helps with that. And it's, you know, I think in order to like find truth about relationship and your own identity, there has to be a little risk at offending or being offensive,
yeah.
Not intentionally offending, you know, it's not malicious, but you can't always stay. It's like, you can't always keep it safe and expect deep connection.
Well, and also that act of trying to stay, if you're inhibited in trying not to offend someone, then that's kind of your side of the coin of, am I really being, I'm withholding.
Yeah.
That's how I'm preventing intimacy, by holding back. That was my marriage. I mean, I could say all sorts of things about how my ex-wife was difficult in this way or that way, but in a lot of ways I didn't show up. I didn't, and essentially when I didn't say how I felt, when I didn't say what I wanted, I was giving her a watered down version of me. I was not telling her who I was.
Yeah.
So then how can I expect her to deal with me as who I am if I'm not even telling her who I am? That's one of the tragedies in all this when we're talking about codependency now, really. I mean, yeah. that's the sad thing, because if we don't have the ability to even be who we are and let people know who we are, then how can they love us, really?
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think our presence in the relationship, you know, becomes as small as what we feel like needs to fit in to avoid offending.
Right.
You know, if I just get really small and keep it really safe and really tight, you know, I won't become a burden. I won't be problematic. I won't be. And like you said, you know, now we're kind of diving into the realm of codependency, but.
Well, and then what that leads to is eventually there's none of you left.
Right.
Anyway, well, I love how we can just like go off on tangents like this. It's great.
I love that people haven't left when we go off on tangents.
Yeah, I love that too. I love that too. I appreciate you guys coming up and being here.
Be a man. Dress for success. Wear the pants in the relationship. Pull yourself up by your bootstraps. Give the shirt off your back, but don't lose your shirt. Are you really going to wear that shirt? Be a man. Be a ladies' man. Be the man at home. Make a man out of that kid. Sometimes you have to manhandle a situation to show them you're the man. Act like a man. Be the man at the gym. Is that all you can lift? Man up. Whoops. Man down. Be a man. Carry on. Carry your weight. Carry your water. Carry the ball across the goal line. Be a man. Take a chance. Take a risk. Take the job. Take the money. Don't take more than you give. Don't take any crap. Be a man. Be the man at your job. Work like a man. Be successful. Hustle. A hardworking man is a happy man. Never send a boy to do a man's job. Be a man. Take it seriously. Take a joke. Never let him see you sweat. Drink like a man. Smoke like a man. Fight like a man. Be a man. Tough it out. Don't cry. Don't complain. Don't worry. And don't trust doctors. Diet like a man.